Going to introduce you to a true American hero now. His name is Commander Richard Jaddick. He served on the front lines in the war in Iraq. He has served as a Marine. He served as a naval officer. And in Iraq, he served as a doctor in combat, for which he was awarded the Bronze Star with a Combat V for Valor. He spent 7 months there, including the Battle of Fallujah back in November of 2004. Commander Jaddick, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Pleasure having you on here today. This is a remarkable story about you and the Marines that you were stitching back together again on the front lines. Whose idea was it to go do that on the front lines? Isn't it normal that when you have a medical team, they stay as far behind the lines as possible?
Well, yeah. I mean, the concept has been around to really get as efficiently as possible to get medicine to a wounded Marine as quickly as possible. And it's not something that I came up with as this brand new idea. The idea came from my assistant battalion sergeant back when I was with 3-6 several years ago. And he said we should just be following along with this jump command post or jump CP that follows the front lines of this battle. And so we started doing it then, and we trained with it every time I was with the Marines. And this occasion lent itself to be completely appropriate for me to put a forward aid station out so I could be within 5 minutes of anybody who got injured on the battlefield.
Now, when we're talking about the battlefield here, in the Battle of Fallujah, the battlefield was a city.
That's right. It was the city of Fallujah. It was the urban environment of Fallujah, which there was no air support. We couldn't get a helicopter in to get casualties out. That was there was concern about them getting shot down and having a Black Hawk Down type scenario. So we decided that moving in closer made the most sense because I could get I have this mantra I use. It's the right people at the right place at the right time. And the right time in combat trauma is really as soon as possible.
And you did not stay in the ER that you had set up there, that makeshift emergency room. You actually went out in the field. It wasn't just corpsmen bringing back stretchers to you. You actually went out, and you tell one story in here about a guy with a sucking chest wound, and you knew if you didn't get out there, he would probably not get back to you.
Well, that was my concern. When I heard that over the radio, that you know, that's a serious injury. Most of I don't think anybody in the battalion had seen an injury like that. I had seen them because I had spent several months at the Shock Trauma Center in downtown Baltimore. So I was the only one who had any experience dealing with those types of injuries, and I didn't think it was appropriate to send out a corpsman to deal with that. So I got in the truck and we went.
How dangerous was that for you?
I probably bit off a little more than I thought. It was a combat patrol that we dismounted the vehicles at the edge of the city and walked to where this wounded Marine was. We walked in, we navigated, and he was with a different unit, so he didn't really understand our evacuation system that was specific to the battalion. But the call came in that he needed assistance, and we went to him. So we did find him after doing a long walk through the city of Fallujah, and put him in the back of one of the armored ambulances. It was at that point that I got recalled as we were coming out of the city to go back in.
Yeah, that was the call where here you got one guy who you have at least stable enough to transport, and you get a call about two other Marines who are down and bleeding, and you actually told them, you know, I'm taking a guy back, and they said, okay, it's your call, but they need you.
Right.
How do you make a call like that?
I think as you have to weigh the situation. I knew that this guy was very stable. Anything can happen, and he had a serious wound. This is not something you sneeze at. He was having some difficulty breathing, but I knew also that the other guys down in the middle of the city, from the call on the radio, it was just two according to them. But it turned out to be six down in the ambush site. That's when you think to yourself, okay, can we make it? Can we get those other guys out? And the decision, I never want to have to look back and say, gosh, I wish I had gone in and done more. So we didn't. We turned around. We went back into the city.
It's incredibly brave of you, considering what the conditions were like. And tell me about the conditions. You said, you know, we got out at the city's edge and walked through the city. What was walking through Fallujah like?
It's very surreal. You get out and you can hear rounds going off and when we specifically walked in through the edge into the city, it was there's a low cloud cover and it was a little drizzly, and that was odd in Iraq. But things were very, there was a dampening of all the noise, but the fresh cordite, the smell of gunpowder was all around you, and you were scared. Every window was black, but who knew what was coming out of everything? And here you are, just walking down the middle of the streets, knowing that although the main axis of advance had pushed through this area, that there were insurgents throughout all these buildings. So you kept your eye open, kept your head down, and did what the Marines told you to do.
Did you kind of stand back and let them take the point?
Well, I think any time I had rehearsed this in my mind before, if you go into a combat scenario, you have to be able to, you don't want to be a liability. I never wanted to be that guy who was causing effort to get me to where I needed to be. I wanted just to be a part of the team. So what I did was fall into line, and even on several occasions, I had to take out my pistol, and I was covering corners as Marines were, you know, we were filing past open areas.
Now, here's an interesting other dilemma. Well, I guess it would be a dilemma for some. Maybe it was for you. As a doctor, you're trained to put people back together. As a Marine, you're trained to take people apart.
Yes. Yeah, it's a bit of an oxymoron. But
did you shoot anyone?
I never shot anybody. I used my pistol to cover corners, and I had already really gone through this scenario in my head, and I think you have to before you get into a scenario like that, that if somebody comes and is there to injure my Marines or myself, my job is to completely protect the Marines of the battalion. So I would have done anything that was required.
Marine first, medicine second?
In certain situations, yes. And in other situations, it's a little different. But, you know, I was in the middle of the parking lot outside of our forward aid station when we had about 13 casualties come in. And in the parking lot, we were triaging and working on what we could and bringing the most serious inside. And I was out there when it was noted that the snipers would always kind of perk up when the casualties would come in. And we were taking sniper rounds, and lo and behold, I looked across, and you could never really see or figure out where the rounds were coming from. Lo and behold, looked across, and there was one sniper that I could see, and I directed the Marines. I said, "There's a target on that roof," and the Marines took him out. But you know, unfortunately, it was something I put together.
Is there any part of you that goes a little Hawkeye Pierce at that moment, and you think, "Okay, the Marines just put that guy down. Now I have to be a doctor, and I have to go attend to that guy?"
Well, yeah. I mean, if there is no threat, and he is a wounded human being, then that's my job.
Did you do that?
For that particular sniper, no. That he did not make it.
In other instances, have you done that?
I've certainly worked with. I've treated quite a few insurgents as they come in. And certainly there's some mental anguish that goes along with it.
But, sure, because you're looking at this guy and thinking 5 minutes ago he wanted to kill me.
Right, but at the same time, you have to live with yourself, and that's what I had to do. And I have sworn the Hippocratic Oath. I've taken the oath. My job is to save lives. I am not political, and if they're on the table, I have to deal with their wounds. And that's what I did. I wanted to go home without a huge amount of hatred in my heart. I wanted to go home knowing that every day that I look in the mirror, I did everything I was supposed to do to the best of my ability. You know, in and of itself, keeping an insurgent alive, those hardcore radical Islamists that don't like us so much that they want to die in martyrdom, maybe my punishment is just keeping him alive.
Yeah. Commander Richard Jaddick, recipient of the Bronze Star with a Combat V for Valor. His book is called On Call in Hell, A Doctor's Iraq War Story. One of the things that he was doing there was putting our Marines back together again. He was serving with the 1-8 Marines and earned himself a Bronze Star with a Combat V for Valor for helping to set up a, I guess it's called a forward aid station, right, Richard?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, that meant that the doctors and the medical equipment were as close to where the battles were going on as possible to get to the fallen Marines as quickly as possible. Not just to do triage, right? You were actually doing treatment there.
We were, well, treatment, we were, we did what we call advanced trauma life-saving procedures, and anything, it really boiled down to getting fluid started in somebody and getting whatever bleeding they had taken care of. We were very basic. We didn't bring any high tech equipment in. We used what we could get in, and it was mostly gauze, IV fluids, some chest tubes, and some good decision making.
But you did more than a corpsman could do in the field.
Right. Most of the corpsmen are not trained in advanced trauma life saving. I mean, that's a physician accreditation. So it's a little more outside the skills of a regular corpsman.
This forward aid station that you set up helped save a lot of lives. In fact, you're credited with saving 30 Marines. You and your team are credited with saving 30 Marines who otherwise wouldn't be alive today. Did the Pentagon take note of this, and are they doing it elsewhere now?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, once I came back from Fallujah, I went into a residency, so I haven't heard from them. I'm sure that this is, and the story is that this is one way to handle a situation where evacuation seems like it may take too long to get to some sort of surgical treatment. So I'm hoping that as people read the book, as battalion surgeons who are out there read the book, as commanders who will read the book, will say, hey, here's an option. This is something that we can use, and we can actually treat these patients much further forward than waiting for them to come out. And, you know, my concern was anytime you travel with a wounded patient, you're always at risk of the mobility of the vehicle, the time it takes for the vehicle to get out, and he's bleeding.
Yeah, and when you're maneuvering over rough terrain, how do you keep him stable?
Well, and that's why my opinion is they need to be very stable before they start to make that move, and you can only stabilize them by having somebody intervene, get whatever's broken, splinted, whatever needs tourniqueted, pack these wounds very tightly, and then have somebody in the vehicle as they're riding out who continues to monitor as they go.
Since you were putting them back together again and helping them hopefully get back home to their families, you probably worked on some of the guys who are now in that outpatient program at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, which has, of course, been in the news since the Washington Post expose of 2.5 weeks ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Paul, I'll be honest with you. I know that as these Marines, as my Marines came back, we did follow them and see a lot of them wound up in Bethesda, some of them in Walter Reed. And I know that the medical care there at both those hospitals is outstanding. I know the physicians that work there, they work very hard at providing top-notch medical care. What has happened seems to be more bureaucratic and more lack of attention to detail for the Marines and the sailors that and the soldiers that are there. They're just not getting the attention to the paperwork, to the continuing care that goes on. And I don't know anything more than that because I haven't really had the opportunity to follow it too closely.
Yeah, well, it has caused quite a ruckus. After that Post piece came out, we talked about it quite a bit here, and it finally took the attention of the media to get the politicians and the Pentagon to pay attention to this. And hopefully Bob Gates, the new Secretary of Defense, will actually stand up for what he has said he was going to do, which is to hold the people responsible accountable, not just for the red tape, but for ignoring the needs of the fallen heroes who are trying to get their lives back together again there. All right, enough said about that, unless you had something else to add.
No, I think that is the most important, that these kids, that these wounded personnel, men and women, need the complete and total support of everybody in the military, and that involves the leadership, and they need to be involved with all of that goes on with them, and it's good to see that something is getting done.
When you were dealing with the Marines of the 1-8 there in Fallujah and elsewhere, you were also in Haditha, and as I said, you spent 7 months with boots on the ground there. When these guys would get wounded, Did they want to come home, or did they want to get out of that bed and go back in the field with their buddies?
None of when they were wounded, I did not keep wounded Marines around for very long. They were always evacuated out.
Mm-hmm.
We had an operational mission, so to actually hold patients became problematic for us. But most of them, almost 100% of them, you know, no matter how badly they were wounded, wanted to stay. Some of them were too wounded, obviously, to even talk. But the ones that, you know, if you could have strapped them back together and sent them back out, that's where they wanted to be. They wanted to be with their buddies. That's one of the things that I talk about in the book, is that these are stories of the men and women I served with, who have this camaraderie that allows them to make these ultimate sacrifices. That is really truly amazing.
I'm going to take another break, and we'll come back for one more segment with Commander Richard Jaddick. The book is a terrific read. It's called On Call in Hell, A Doctor's Iraq War Story. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Commander Richard Jaddick about his book, On Call in Hell, A Doctor's Iraq War Story. And it is a remarkable one. He and a colleague, another battlefield surgeon, set up a forward aid station to get to these Marines of the 1-8 as quickly as possible and save their lives, do the triage and treatment up close to where they had been hurt as quickly as possible so that they could then be stabilized and transported back to places where they needed help. Some of them, by the way, needed multiple surgeries. There's one guy in the book who got flown off, I guess it was to Ramstein Air Force Base, and he needed something like 10 different surgeries to put him back together. That was that big gunnery sergeant. What was his name?
Gunnery Sergeant Shane.
Yeah. Oh, what a story that was. And in fact, he's the guy who had to crawl into the ambulance, right?
That's right. He, Gunny Shane, when I had loaded the ambulance, we had loaded, it was full. There was no stretcher room left, and we had just taken another RPG off the top of the vehicle, which didn't explode. So Gunny Shane was lying there. I had no more stretchers, and we moved him to the track, and I had to put him underneath the bottom stretcher on the floor. And he was big. It was cramped. It was chaotic. And I just as I pushed him, I was yelling at him, "Hey, brother, keep moving. Just keep moving forward." And then he was able to get in there on his own, and we got him out of there.
You know, I can visualize these things as you're telling them. They're just, I can't possibly know what the experience is like, but you do such a good job in the book of putting us in that place. And then there are kind of odd little funny stories. There's one about a young clerk. I guess he's 18 or 19. Here's a guy 20 years younger than you who is serving as a Marine, and he's a clerk, and it's his job to keep the records together, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah, he was... He kept all the records of what was going on, who was casualty, who, you know, there's a huge amount of requirement to make sure you know where everybody's always accounted for, because the last thing you want to do is go looking for a Marine who isn't lost or account for a Marine that is lost. And so you want to always keep track of what's going on and who you send out. And that was his job. And we took a lot of casualties one day. There was a lot of fire going on around outside the station. And I remember thinking, you know, where is he? He's not here. And I'm becoming relatively annoyed with the fact that this 19-year-old Lance Corporal wasn't where he was supposed to be, until he came waltzing in later on that evening. And I kind of came up to him very curtly and said, "Hey, you know, where have you been?" And he said, "Well, sir, the insurgents across the street were making a rush, and I was up front with the machine gun team protecting this side." So I had to look at him, with all that being said and done, say, "Well, that's a pretty good excuse. Probably the best one I've ever heard."
Yeah, we have guys who are charging the gate, and you
right.
went out to defend the base.
Right. So
So you weren't there handling the paperwork at that particular moment. I guess I can let you go on that.
Right. You know, the dog ate my homework excuse was not there. That was a really good one.
Yeah. Did you have the supplies you needed? I mean, you're a resident in Georgia now. When you go into work every day, the instruments are sterilized. Everything's probably clean. I'm guessing it wasn't like that in Iraq.
No, nothing. I mean, first of all, everything that comes into you is full of, every Marine, every wounded patient is full of mud, caked with dirt and sweat, and the wounds that they're sustaining are dirty wounds. So nothing I had in the BA in the aid station was sterile per se. You know, we didn't wear gloves. We tried to use gloves, but I mean, by the time you started moving people around inside of this small little area, they were torn off in seconds. So we did a lot of alcohol washes, the gear, anything that we had to be reused, which were more or less just clamps. Everything else was disposable. We get into the Curlex and the tourniquets, and that was all disposable stuff. But anything that had to be reused, which were Kelly clamps, or was sterilized just with alcohol. The dirt of everything that came in would be washed out after each mass casualty with bottled water. We'd take bottled water and just pour it on the inside and wash dirt and blood out.
Just improvising as best you could.
That's right, and that's, you know, we didn't have. I don't think there was a lot of gee whiz high tech gear that would have assisted me in any of this. I think most of it came from what we had on hand and utilizing it to the best of our ability.
I've only got a minute left here before I let you go.
Okay,
you went over there at age 38. You volunteered to go, and you did remarkable work there. And now you're home. Would you go again?
I would, yes, I would, and I say that knowing that my wife doesn't listen to the radio station down there. But I think it's the most honorable job I've ever had to be a part of that team, to watch these incredible young men and women really step up to the plate and do the things that they did. It is family, and you don't do it for money, you don't do it for power, you certainly don't do it for fame. You do it for each other, and there's really no better feeling in my book.
Well, whenever I talk to somebody who has served, I always thank them for their service. And I know some of those who have served thank you for yours as well. Commander Richard Jaddick, the book is On Call in Hell, A Doctor's Iraq War Story. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.